Hello and welcome to the Current Blue podcast, sponsored by NordVPN. If you want the best discount code available, you can visit the link in the description down below. I'm your host for this one, Dan Rowlandson, joined by John Townley in a snazzy Nike jumper. John, how are you, mate?
Yeah, buzzing. What a week for Villa. Two wins. I was about to say three. Two wins and progressing in the semi-finals of the Conference League. It's like a dream scenario that I don't think many of us expected before we went to the Emirates. So, yeah, it's perfect. And as I said before, that helps my mood. So, doing very well. Thanks, Dan. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Also, this is our weekly show where we take questions from the audience. There is a lot to get through this afternoon, so we're going to try and get straight into it. Before we do, though, just a quick word on Sunday. We're going to do a whole episode about Ollie Watkins later in the week, about why he deserves to be, in our opinion at least, the player of the season in the Premier League. Will he actually get it? Who knows? Probably not. How good was he on Sunday? I said in the post-match show that it was a masterclass in what Ollie Watkins offers away from scoring goals, his hold-up play, his link-up play. That was a 10 out of 10 performance that just didn't include an actual goal.
That's why I gave him a 9 on my ratings, which I felt a little bit harsh, but no goal. To be fair, you've just summed it up. It was a masterclass in what Ollie Watkins does. And I don't know, I think for Ollie Watkins' credit, I mean, he doesn't get a whole lot of it outside of Villa because he's not top six and Ivan Toney exists, which is, you know, maybe we'll talk about that another time, but it's performances like this kind of help him in a weird way because it proves that he can do everything, you know. When he doesn't score, you know, if he was to score, we would have said, oh, that now that's this amount of goals, and you would have focused on that, whereas actually it allows you to appreciate everything else that he does for the team. And this is something that we've known, you know, 2 years ago when he first joined. In his first few games, it was like, oh, this guy's a machine, like he doesn't stop running and he's so good at pressing and all these different things. And yeah, he's become a world-class striker under Unai Emery. This is obviously something that we've known, for a little bit of time now. And when I was watching him yesterday, especially in the second half, I said that it was one of the best halves that I've seen of Ollie Watkins, like, ever, because he was that good. When I was watching, I was thinking, there's honestly not many strikers that I think could do what he's doing right now in world football. And that's got quite a staggering statement to make. You know, and Watkins was always a good Premier League striker, but to get to this level and to get to it so quickly as well, it's, massive credit to him and obviously the staff, Rodri, that he works with on an individual basis as well. So, yeah, fantastic performance. He was completely unplayable. Zabani, who's the big centre-back, he's only 21 for Bournemouth, and I believe Villa had an interest in him at some point, but I really rate him. I think he's a very good defender and he's very strong. He reads the game well. He's very aggressive too. And I think there was a really good battle in the first half, and also actually in the first game back in December, there was a bit of kind of pushing and shoving between Zabani and Watkins. There was a real battle there, two very good players. But Watkins taught him a lesson in the second half. So yeah, full credit to Watkins, you know, man-marked through the game, less than 72 hours after Lille. He's playing almost all the time anyway. So, you know, he showed no signs of fatigue, apart from when he rounded the keeper and laid on a plate for Bailey. He just didn't get up, did he? Just stayed on the floor. Probably just knackered. But he's one player that is probably the player who's improved the most, I suppose, under Emery. And, you know, full credit to him because he's an outstanding player.
He's closer to Kane now than any other striker, I think, in terms of, you know, you think of Kane dropping back deep and supporting players and linking play. Specifically against Bournemouth at the weekend, that's what Ollie Watkins was doing in abundance, you know, bullying defenders and dragging the team all over the place and being a playmaker as much as getting on the end of things. This isn't the Ollie Watkins we saw when Emery first came and he was told to stay between the posts and not really do much else, which was obviously great for him, but he's now evolved his game even further to be this all-round creative forward rather than just an out-and-out number nine. So, you know, a few months ago when we're saying we wouldn't swap him for anyone because Haaland's kind of the best and he's the second best striker. Haaland's a brilliant goal scorer, obviously, but his all-round game, Ollie Watkins, is closer to Harry Kane than he is to Haaland as a footballer.
I was saying about Haaland, whatever, he's the second best striker in the Premier League, but that you don't want that to kind of take away from, well, Watkins is probably the best at other stuff, though, if that makes sense. Haaland certainly isn't an all-round striker. He's just extremely, well, I say he's just extremely good. He's very good in lots of different areas, but specifically one thing, which is goal scoring, which is staying between the posts. And, you know, I'm not calling him a poacher or anything like that, because when he was at Borussia Dortmund, he had to play differently and he did it very, very well. But Watkins, you know, he's better in some other departments. And, yeah, just full credit to him for how he's knuckled down, put his head down and worked to get where he is. And I'm not just talking about under Emery, to get to the Premier League in itself. I was listening to a different podcast, the Villa podcast it's called, and they were saying that, you know, John Duran's age, when Watkins was that old, he would have been playing for like Western Supermare. And I know players develop at different rates, but, you know, it's, you know, his story in general is just, you know, super. And this is probably why he's so, you know, determined to become the best he can possibly be. He's finally working with a manager, and this isn't a disservice to Dean Smith, by the way. Without Dean Smith, I don't think Watkins would even be in this position, but he's now working with one of the best coaches in European football. And yeah, that is going to take your game on, but only if you want it yourself, and he definitely does. So full credit to him.
There's so much more we could say about Ollie Watkins. As I say, we are going to do a whole podcast dedicated to him, so we can do it in proper detail rather than try and squeeze it in at the top end of a Q&A. Something I wanted to mention very quickly, which comes from a colleague of yours in the sense of somebody else in the press pack, Jacob Tanswell, tweeted about being speaking to McGinn in the mix zone, and Emery walked past and kind of tapped him on the shoulder and said, "Super John McGinn, not always, but definitely today," or something like that. And I saw a tweet underneath it saying how Emery's man management goes under the radar a little bit. And I wanted to give that a little bit of airtime for a couple of minutes as well, that we think of Unai Emery as this brilliant tactician, and that's what he is, and great game management, and kind of knows how to set up a team and the analytical side of things, the team meetings, the video analysis, all of that. But as a man manager, that's probably something that goes under the radar a little bit, that he's cajoling this squad, which is down to the bare bones of, you know, if you look at the side that played yesterday, there's 13 or 14 players that can be used to start games in that squad. A lot of those players played 2 hours on Thursday night, and he's getting them through this, and he's instilled this mentality of no excuses and hard work, and kind of we're all fighting for something. And I don't think anyone really would associate Unai Emery as being a good man manager, but he has to be to do what he's done with Villa and other clubs as well.
Yeah, they're running through brick walls to say get over the line this season. You wouldn't know that we were trying to get over the line, if that makes sense, you know, in how it's phrased, against Bournemouth, because we were the team who looked like we didn't play on Thursday, or should I say Bournemouth looked like the team we played on Thursday. It is testament to what he's doing there. I don't know, I think how we see him, as in the media, but then I guess fans as well, you know, you can watch press conferences on Villa TV, the broadcast section. I think he can be quite reserved, or I don't know, maybe serious in those press conferences, which is, you know, absolutely fine, because I think this is a big reason why he has Damian next to him. He wants to, you know, nail those answers. He doesn't want to say anything that would be interpreted wrong or whatever it may be. So therefore, I don't think we see the real Unai sometimes. And I think that's why, away from that press conference setting, anytime that I've spoken to him outside of that, i.e. in America, or, you know, seen him, he's very much more relaxed, shall I say. He's more, I don't know how to put it, but I think we probably just see him differently maybe in press conferences or whatever, when fans can hear him talk to the press and whatnot. But yesterday as well, kind of the first time, well, not the first time, but one of the first times in a while anyway, when he was coming down the tunnel, he kind of gave in to giving high fives to younger fans and stuff by the tunnel, and I thought that was good. You know, again, it kind of shows the real Unai, should we say. I remember when Leon Bailey also mentioned, maybe even last year, like, he said he's the funniest coach he's worked with, which, again, you don't kind of, or you wouldn't presume that if you think Unai is kind of hard and cold tactics, this is what we're doing and this is how we're going to do it, anything other than football, I don't want to talk to you about it. But no, he's clearly got more to himself than just kind of this massive tactical brain. He's clearly a very impressionable person as well, and, you know, he's not he speaks what, 5 languages, so he can talk to different people, and clearly getting a lot of buy-in, not just tactically, but, as you know, as a group as well. As you say, Dan, there's no excuses in this group at all, and I bet they'd want to use excuses like you see every other manager do, and players as well. But no, they're just cracking on with the job. So yeah, he what he does, it rubs off on the players. He's very impressionable. That's the kind of key point.
Let's start with one of the questions then from Darren, as we're talking about Unai Emery. He says, "I know that we're very biased, but who deserves manager of the year more than Unai Emery? Is there anybody?"
No, there's not. there isn't.
but will he win it, do you think?
I think he might, you know. If we get top four, I think he might. And I know that's, you know, we don't get enough credit. It's what we deserve. And I just think, how can you overlook that? Who has done a better? So Pep Guardiola, treble winners, you know, going again to win the league title, you know, would be a great achievement. Of course it would. But I think everyone put Man City at the top of their predictions. Maybe Arsenal were there, I'm not sure. But and that's not to take away from their success, because winning, you know, you kind of don't get enough when you always win stuff. It's like, well, that is where you're expected to do. But then doing it, you know, you still need credit. But I don't know. I look at maybe Rob Edwards if Luton stay up. But I personally think Villa getting top four with the amount of injuries and whatnot. I know Luton have had some as well. But that for me is a big achievement, I think, than because we've also juggled Europe. If we get Europe, and I know that doesn't come into it, but it has to really, because it does affect the league season. Yeah, for me, he is manager of the year, and the way that he conducts himself as well is never in. When was the last time he got booked? Probably Brentford in the league game. He might have. Did he get booked in? No, I think it was Austin McPhee that got booked in the European game against Lille. Yeah, he's kind of just a perfect season if we can grow on to fourth now. Everything we've had to battle with, yeah, manager of the season, hands down for me.
Villa will maybe put everything into the Conference League, and it'll be a difficult job to get back into the top seven again, and maybe Villa's route into Europe for next season is winning the Conference League, but they'll finish 11th or whatever, and like West Ham did, basically. And that would, by some, would be considered a reasonably successful season to have won a trophy and be in Europe again. But to do what we're doing, to be fourth and juggled Europe very successfully, whether we go on to win it or not, to get to the semi-final with the amount of injuries that we've had and be in the driving seat for fourth with four games to go. Even if we don't do it, it's an incredible season, but I do think we will do it. I just don't, because we've never had any of the credit all the way through, why is he all of a sudden going to get manager of the year? Same for Watkins with player of the year. Well, I just don't see it happening.
I feel like it might just hit people, you know, if we finish, it would be like, oh, Villa in the Champions League, actually. You know, wow, what a great
achievement. Where did that come from? Yeah, maybe.
Where have they come from? Well, we were there the whole season. I honestly think it will be something like that, which was similar to what it was when we got into Europe. I remember people were kind of just ignoring that was a thing. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, Villa in Europe again, by the way. And it's like,
Right, let's get into some questions then. But before we do, let's have a quick word from our sponsors, NordVPN. Right, John. Audience questions, although the first one is not a question, but I want to get it in first because it's a follow-up to what we've just been talking about managing Europe. Yep. So Jay on Twitter put an image together of his notes app where he's got Villa's league games after the Conference League games and the results for each one. Now I tweeted him saying, I'm nicking this for the podcast, but I will credit you. So he's done the hard work for me, because it feels like me and my dad said as we were coming out of the game, we've got a week to prepare for Chelsea now. It feels like it might be a bad thing in a way, because like with the relentlessness of Europe Premier League, something that we've handled pretty well, and having a week's rest is unusual to us. Yep. But I'm sure the Villa players having Monday and Tuesday off will absolutely be loving life at the moment. So I'm just going to read a lot of results to you. So after Legia, we lost, but then we beat Chelsea. We beat Zrinski, and then we drew to Wolves. We beat AZ, we beat Luton. Beat AZ again, beat Fulham. Beat Legia, drew to Bournemouth. Drew to Zrinski, beat Brentford. Drew to Ajax, lost to Spurs. That's the only negative coupling of the two, although, as we said, the point against Ajax was decent. The point. It wasn't a point, was it?
Yeah,
draw against Ajax was decent. Beat Ajax, drew to West Ham, beat Lille, beat Arsenal, beat Lille again, beat Bournemouth. That's a pretty impressive record. Just talk about the beginning of the season, juggling Europe, and how will that affect league form. It hasn't. If anything, we've been better after a European week, which is unbelievable. Again, with that added context of the injuries that we've had. If this was a fully fit Villa squad and we can call in Buendia or Ramsey or Zaniolo or whoever to be the understudies to Morgan Rogers and Diaby and whoever, you kind of go, Villa have got a good squad, to be fair. So yeah, I can understand why they're managing it. But to do what we've done with the squad that we've got, it's honestly unbelievable.
You know, Emery's the manager of the year. Oh, we've already I'm just joking about that. That kind of demonstrates it more than anything. The Tottenham game feels like a bit of an anomaly as well. Not just ignore it because they're our Champions League rivals and we want to forget about it. It just didn't feel right, that game. Just didn't. And yes, Spurs, you know, they're a good team. I've said that for a while. I think they're a very good team. And while Villa are the fourth best team in the division, and as I've said before, they just need to prove it now. That game just didn't feel right. We weren't at it. I don't think the formation worked well. And I said before, that's probably one of the very few times where you could probably don't say criticise Unai, but possibly so. Or at least he would admit, okay, we probably did something wrong there. We made a bit of a mistake. You know, all of those results are good results. I don't know how to put that, but like Chelsea away is a difficult game. Wolves away is a difficult game. Bournemouth away, difficult game. I know every game is difficult in the Premier League, but it's not. They're not the majority home matches against teams in the bottom half of the table. They're all very testing games. And I think when we were gearing up for the season, that was my reasoning behind Villa finishing. I think I put them seventh, so European football again, but winning the Conference League. You know, for me, that was a brilliant season. Then Europa League the year after. But that my reasoning behind that was because I thought Thursday games, then going into a Wolves away or Chelsea away or West Ham or whatever it may be, to teams that we've Chelsea we haven't struggled against, but other teams we have kind of, you know, we may have lost 1-0 or, you know, not won or whatever it may be. That was my kind of thinking behind it. So to, again, like overcome that and have better results than, as you say, than even having like a week-long rest. Again, testament to Unai Emery, and the guy's just magic. Like, he's done this for 16 years and he knows the methods behind it. It doesn't matter what players he's working with, how many are injured, how many are suspended or whatever it may be. Like, we haven't had Luis for the last two games. We've won twice. Like, almost as if he was never, you know, here before. You know, which again probably sounds harsh because he's a fantastic footballer, and you know, when we have him back, we've got a bit more depth there, which is great. But yeah, again, just how we manage to overcome these different things is something that, like, even I would have admitted defeat in a lot of those games because of the struggles we've had. I would have said, it's because of injuries, because of that. But because we have Emery, who doesn't even talk about it, doesn't want to entertain the idea of excuses. We don't even bring it up because we feel like we're being either negative or it doesn't matter because Unai has told us that, you know.
Yeah.
That's the same mentality for the players.
Yeah, I can't remember how I predicted us to finish. Don't know whether you can remember what I said, maybe.
Oh, of course, yes.
I don't know. Not important.
You know what? I've probably thought about that every day apart from today. You sitting there next to me and saying, we'll get four, and me turning around and like almost coughing up. fair play, man. Like, I had.
Oh, we haven't done it yet, John. We haven't done it. I'm not going to gloat about it. Come on. Yeah. This Q&A obviously takes us in loads of different directions, not specifically about the game that has just been. So let's go with this one from David, who says, the current team's success is built around Martinez, Konsa, Luiz, Watkins and McGinn, players that have played 150 games together. Which players do you think will still be going in 150 more games and inspire the next iteration of this team? Which I think is a really interesting question. So just based off the 38 Premier League games, 150 games would be another four seasons. Now, obviously, Villa are playing 40-odd games a season, 45, hopefully 50, with European competitions and cup runs and whatever. So you're probably talking at three more years of a player. So that when I saw 150, my first thought was like, well, no one will still be here then because it feels like a lot, but it isn't really. So who do you think kind of stands out as being the one that you think will be here for a long enough time to see through the next phase of Aston Villa, as mad as that sounds?
Absolutely no idea.
I've got an answer who I would like it to be.
Yeah, I think you've got to fit in a lot of different things though, because you're looking at age. Who has been here already for nearly 4 years? Are they going to last here for more than 7 or 8 years? That's very uncommon in football. Mm-hmm. Not because the player doesn't want to be here. You know, they've been here already for 3 or 4 years, as I say. So I think there's just, it's natural that players will come and go. What was 4 years ago? What season was that?
Yeah, back in the Premier League, I think.
All right, so if you look at that team, and I know we've come a long way, but if you look at that team compared to now, goodness me. My honest answer, I'm not sure. Maybe none of them will be here. I don't know. 4 years is a very long time in football. That's a very long time, and some of those players will be getting on then. I can't imagine John McGinn leaving ever, to be honest. Unless he wants to play into his mid-30s somewhere else just to be playing more football, I don't know. But then you ask yourself, well, is Ezri Konsa going anytime soon? No. Watkins, no. You know, all these players, say the kind of bedrock of the team for the last few years, you don't imagine them leaving anyway, but that can change in 3 years. So right now, I would say those guys, yeah, they're probably going to be there. I don't know. It's 4 years is a long time of football. My answer's rubbish, but I really can't look that far. Things change. Like, I don't know.
The two that I would like it to be, firstly, John McGinn, still, you know, captain Villa, winning a couple of trophies in the next 2 or 3 years will be amazing. He's 29, so that takes him up, again, if we're talking 3 or 4 seasons, up to his early 30s. As you say, maybe he wants to retire back in Scotland and leaves that way, maybe. But
there's been a bit of time there.
Yeah, if he had the opportunity to go back home, maybe he would. But the other one would be Emi Martinez. again, probably more from a footballing standpoint, that I would love the stability of still having Emi Martinez to be our goalkeeper for the next four or five seasons, and him to be maybe a captain as well one day and be winning trophies with us and playing in the Champions League with us. Those are the two that are the standouts for me.
You can kind of look at, as I say, Rodgers, Nedeljkovic at right back, hopefully progresses well, Sousa at left back maybe, you know, all these players that we are buying for the future. You trust that Monchi's got a very good talent idea, and we know he does, you know, Morgan Rodgers as an example, then those players will hopefully be here for years to come, and they'll develop, like, you know, like Tottenham did with a lot of their players. You know, Kyle Walker's, I know Eriksen was already a top player, but then they become part of the furniture then. Son, other players, Alderweireld, I don't know, you can go on and on. They did it so well when they were kind of going between that team of nearly getting into Europe every season or trying to. That's kind of what we're doing now. And then they jumped to becoming a Champions League club, and they have been for like nearly a decade. It helps off the pitch. They've been fantastic. Off the pitch, we need to be fantastic, but we have the footballing IQ, I suppose, in the football department to get there. We just now have to back it up with money coming into the club, which is the hard bit, and the bit that Tottenham were allowed to do because PSL wasn't, you know, as bitey, should we say.
Back to this season then. CB82 asks, who is your alternative or unsung player of the season? For example, not an obvious shout like Ollie Watkins. Luca Dean would be mine, they say. I'll let you go for this one.
Okay.
Luca Dean is the obvious choice, I think.
Yeah, Luca Dean is the obvious choice, yeah. All right, I'll go with Yuri Tielemans, I think.
I thought you might, yeah. He's probably second for me, yeah.
Yeah, and this is because I can't say Bailey or even Konsa, because those guys are, I think, I wouldn't say unsung, but they've, in different ways, Konsa rarely gets a mention because he's just that good all the time. He makes his defending look so easy, and Bailey is almost most improved, I suppose. So kind of landed at Tielemans just because he had I don't want to say a difficult start, but he had to kind of sit out the first 2 months of the season at least, because he's just getting used to the structure. And Emery, he hadn't worked under him before, obviously, and it takes a period for him to adapt in that structure, because I always say that when Emery first came to Villa, what he deployed as a structure and as a formation was kind of like the first level of difficulty, if that makes sense. And then it went from that to that to that to that. And by the end of the season, we were like up here. Tielemans comes in without even having the grounding, and then he comes in here at the, you know, the start of this season, and we'd already changed like three centre backs, and it's like, okay, you know, those our players are kind of, they've moulded under Emery, and then Tielemans comes in completely fresh, and is, you know, kind of been asked straight away, right, you need to learn this and do this. This isn't the position you played at Leicester. You might not have played in this position in your career, you know, and how you do it. So, yeah, again, it speaks volumes of him as a footballer, how well he's adapted to it after, you know, a bit of time. We've seen Diaby do it in a different way. He had a great start, then he kind of fizzled out a bit. And then he's, you know, you can see there's kind of shoots of recovery again in Diaby, and hopefully next season he can kind of fly from the off again and stay at that level. Pau Torres was different because we built a team around Pau Torres, but he knows Emery, of course, and he knows exactly what he wants. It's probably easier as well for him to go into meetings. He knows what they're going to look like, etc. For Tielemans, a big difference, a big transition for him, but what a footballer. And we're seeing that, you know, in games like against Bournemouth, you know, some of the quality that some of the balls in behind, and really, really good footballer. And we did a video before, didn't we, Dan, about how he's kind of indispensable in that role next to Watkins. He's actually proven that he's indispensable in the 11 to a degree when he comes backwards as well, because he's learning different things, and really sound footballer. And obviously on a free, but a big contract, a big kind of package, but a player that I think a lot of Premier League clubs, or they're, shall I say, chiefs in Premier League clubs, are probably looking at their transfer department and thinking, why weren't we onto him? You know, been a fantastic son.
Let's talk about the atmosphere a little bit. There was two questions from Fiona and Pajo, who say, should the club encourage fans arriving early for the last remaining matches to welcome the players and the coach? I think every little helps. And Villa Park sounded really good at all times. Are we finally seeing the end of time where fans panic after a goal or a slow start and assume the worst will happen? Second point, yes, I think that has largely dissipated now, that I don't kind of hang my head in as much shame as I would have done a couple of years ago to concede in first. I kind of think, well, we'll score and hopefully get back into this. Whereas previously you think, oh, that's going to be hard for us now to even get back into this. But I think, well, we'll probably score at least a goal in every game. And then if we get the one and we kind of run a comeback, then we'll probably go on and get the winner. And I think most people in Villa Park probably feel that at home, at least anyway. As for the coaches, the coach greeting and the 1897 group and all that kind of stuff, do you want to just give a bit of a summary on how you saw all that kind of stuff play out at the weekend?
Yeah, it was fantastic. It felt like the final game of the season sort of thing. On that conceding the first goal thing, I think it helped because of the occasion and because of what we did on Thursday night, if I'm being totally honest. I think if we did go behind in any normal circumstances, I think it would be, you know, the crowd wouldn't groan and moan, but I don't think they would have... No, I don't know how to put that, but I think there'd be less kind of positivity, should we say, if we went behind in a normal game. Because the positivity we had from Thursday night really did just overflow into that match for me. I have something to say, actually, on the 1897 group. I thought they were brilliant, and I really, really encourage people to get involved with what they're doing. But I was really disappointed with some fans on social media that chose to kind of just be negative about it. I was shocked, genuinely shocked, and I was going to put something out, but...
Shocked by negativity on social media, John? Come on.
No, and it just sums up... Like, everyone's got their opinion, but I just thought it summed up social media and society, to be honest. Just why on earth are some people trying to put them down? Like, the 8970 group were formed a couple of, you know, not a couple weeks. Of weeks ago, but maybe months.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, this is their first trial in the away end. Where else are they going to go in Villa Park? But basically, if people don't know, 897 group, follow them on Twitter, and we did a piece about them. They're basically trying to improve the atmosphere at Villa Park using flags, using banners, increase the atmosphere in different parts of the stadium, etc. They've got big plans, and there's a lot of people behind it, and they've worked really, really hard to even get into the club and have meetings to speak with them, to set up where they are. And for some fans to try and bring it down and say, oh, it wasn't as good as I expected, or, you know, they didn't make as much noise or whatever. I was honestly staggered, like genuinely, I was really quite angry about it, because I just thought, what is the point in, firstly, trying to bring them down, but secondly, why are you being negative? I was staggered by it. And, you know, fair play to the 1897 group for starting it in the first place, because whoever was being negative about it, they didn't do it. And why are we all not encouraging them to increase as a group, to you know, have more members? We see it with Newcastle, like war flags that they have. It's fantastic before the game. The Arsenal, they're trying to kind of boost their atmosphere with a little group that they have, and that will probably increase. And people try and take the mick out of some fan bases that do it, and Palace do it really well. Well, that's what we want to have at Villa Park, and people who are being negative about it, I'm sure they would love it. So why on earth are you not giving your 100% to back it, and instead being negative about, oh, I expected this or expected that? It blew my mind, genuinely. So, you know, full credit to 1897 group and everything that they're trying to do. This is just the start of it. So, you know, if they was watching this, completely just ignore any negativity that comes with it. I'm sure they are, because I've spoken to the guys there and the guys and girls there that they've got big plans for different bits like merchandise. They're really trying to bring it on, and they've got other stuff going on, like trying to help Villa in the community, the Villa Foundation, all that stuff. So to see people try and bring it down, it really frustrated me. And I hope that they probably regret that, and that they'd look into actually what the group are trying to do, because it's not them being, I don't know, like selfish, if we're the lot who are trying to boost the atmosphere because no one else is. It's not like that whatsoever. They're trying to bring everyone together to do it, and they're trying to make a difference. So why not give that 100% backing? And like everyone else, you know, you don't have to be involved with them if you don't want to, because you'd rather sit with other people, with your family or something, give it a park. But if you'd like to, get involved. You know, that's what it's all about. But to sit there on your hands and just say something on social media, I know social media can be like that, but it's, I was really frustrated by that. And luckily, the vast majority of people were behind it and were saying, you know, how good it was and how good it looked. And because it did, it was great to see the flags. It was great seeing the part of Villa Park that was kind of bouncing. You know, you got the Trinity upper was loud again. And then opposite Doug Ellis, where they were in a P9 section. And that will increase and it will grow. And yes, you know, where would they go when the full allocation of away fans sell out? You know, we're not sure. But the only way that this group can continue to flourish and grow is if people are positive about it. So if people being negative, it helps no one. Sorry for the rant, but that really frustrated me, because I just think we're a Villa community, we're a Villa family, Villa fan base. Why are we not giving this everything that we've got? And for some people to try and bring it down, it's just really annoyed me.
No, well said. I sent a couple of messages to Adam Wright last night, who long-time viewers of the podcast will know, and Villaview fans will remember Adam Wright. He's part of the organisational committee, is how he, I said, how do I mention your involvement with this? Because he's asked me to promote it on the podcast, which we have done. You've obviously written a piece about them a couple of weeks ago. He's plugging it on social media and whatnot, which I've seen. I sent him some of my thoughts last night, and I just said, I want to mention it on the podcast. So, like, I don't want, like, an official statement or anything from you, but, like, can I give you some representation of how you guys thought it went as a trial period? You know, what did you think of it? So he sent me a few points. I'm just going to read them out. He said, this is just the beginning. Unless the club extend or change the structure of the ground to get a permanent section of Villa Park is impossible, because you can't turf people out of their seats. Yeah. It was only a trial by the club, and they gave us 100 seats in P9. When that area is available again, hopefully more people will want to relocate their seats to go up and join in with that. Just the exposure from yesterday has gained us hundreds of more followers on social media, and the more that we grow, the louder we will get. Villa on Tour included a clip of us in their vlog. Hopefully more people will follow after watching that. We will meet with the club again now to review yesterday and see what we can do next. The end goal is basically to do that on a bigger scale, effectively.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, what we want. We would love to see a section of 1,000 fans in the whole ten where that's their place, like other clubs do it, but you've got to start somewhere, and for fans online to be like, oh, this is a bit Tim Potter, that's not what I expected. It's like, oh, all right, do you want to go and help contribute then? Like, you're free to move your seat and go and do it yourself.
Yeah, just in society in general, there's some people who just like to bring people down when they're trying to make a difference and better the experience for them. It really frustrated me. So
for me, I'm not going to go up there, because I go to football with my dad. I sit where I sit, and that's fine. But I get to experience what they do, because it will make Villa Park a better place, and hopefully Villa will be a better club, and we'll win games, we'll have a great atmosphere. And I got took a little video clip to send to Adam, because I know that he's in it. He would like to see, obviously there's loads of others, but he would like to see what it looks like from afar. I'll stick it in this episode as well for the YouTube version. Look great, like having that on a bigger scale in years to come would be amazing. So yeah, you absolutely have to start somewhere.
And I don't know why there's negativity anyway. It looked good. It looked great. Like, the atmosphere of Villa Park yesterday was fantastic. That where it comes from, I don't know. People like to bring others down, and it's really sad.
Let's do some of these Morgan Rogers comments. And there was a couple, there's loads to be fair about him asking how good he is, basically. Ricardo says, where would we have been had we not signed Morgan Rogers? It's not just a bonus how good he's been, but he's been absolutely pivotal since Jacob Ramsey got injured. As I say, there was loads about how good he is and what kind of, like we were kind of saying on the post-match show, that not really aware of what kind of player he was going to be. We'd seen him score goals for Middlesbrough in the League Cup and looked a decent player, but the profile that I don't think many people suspected him to be as he was, that this kind of ball-carrying, powerful, agile, intelligent football as well. I don't think people are expecting that for how young he is. And you look at him and think, if that's what they can spot and sign for peanuts, basically, and already develop him from January to now, his ceiling is it's limitless. He can become whatever he wants to be, I think.
Yeah, he's already doubled his price.
easily, yeah.
You know, in the space of 9 Premier League appearances, he hasn't made his 10th yet, and 3 goal contributions his last 4 games. So he's getting output as well. And this is something that when he was playing for Middlesbrough, I think if you looked at, I remember basically studying him in the Chelsea game, you know, the away game at Stamford Bridge. I think they lost like 6-1. And I kind of celebrated his goal when he scored, because obviously we knew he was going to be joining. And I just thought, mainly to shut some people up on Twitter, to be honest, because there was a lot of Villa fans, as are football fans, not just Villa fans. But we can all do that thing of thinking, this guy's not up to it because he's not playing well in this particular game or whatever. And then he scores a great goal. You know, obviously I didn't watch him playing for Middlesbrough previous in the season, but I think we could all tell straight away this kid's clearly got something just from that Chelsea game. For me, you know, the way that he could ride challenges physically, he's dominant, he's quick, and he'd play for Man City, and you don't just stay at Man City for 4 years and learn nothing. You know, I listened to a clip from Danny Murphy, I think it was, basically saying like Tommy Doyle, Cole Palmer, Morgan Rogers.
Yeah, I saw that,
other players as well. They're coming out of the Man City Academy and they're like almost years in advance of where they should be. Similar to when Guardiola was at Barcelona and they were just churning out these players under his kind of tactics and structures. They just knew they were ahead of the game, I suppose. And that's what we're seeing from Rodgers. It's it's all well and good having that kind of physical capability and that quality, but he's so intelligent with his movement, and it's almost like his first action of the game. He didn't even touch the ball to make an attack happen when he did a little dummy, didn't he? He jumped over the ball and then allowed, I think it was Diaby, to kind of lead a counter-attack with Watkins. Didn't come to anything, I don't think, but it's that quality that you can have in the final third. And as you say, less than 10 Premier League appearances already, 21 years of age. It's frightening, the potential that he has. And, again, I think we can all see it, but it's putting it together. When he first joined, he was very raw. I still think he's raw now, but to be raw, but playing to this level, that's very exciting. And next season, full pre-season, that sort of stuff. He clearly got a lot of confidence as well, and that's taken him like no time. A lot of players, I think, when they first came in, if they were Rodgers and they didn't set the world on fire straight away, should we say, in those first few appearances, which is okay. I think some of them may have lost a bit of confidence and they thought, am I ready for this level yet? I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I've got a bit of pressure now because Ramsey's injured and I've got to be playing. He's thrived on that. So I think, again, that speaks to his mentality and his confidence and what Unai Emery's given him, and he's trusting him as well. Again, probably because he has to, because of no Ramsey, and he said in press conferences he's playing more than we thought he would and that he thought he would. But that's not been a bad thing. He's relished it. And I think, again, that's a key point. And why you're looking at this player thinking, all right, he's clearly got something and he should get there because his mentality is right. I remember speaking to different coaches, people who know him best from like younger years as well, and they all said like he's so down to earth and he's so willing to learn. Like even in school, he was a really good pupil or whatever. Like he's the right character. He's the kind of the Dean Smith, what I mean? He's made in like the Ollie Watkins factory of footballers, if that makes sense. Like he's that brand of footballer, and he's clearly integrated into the dressing room very well as well. So yeah, £8 million's an absolute drop in the ocean, but considering Villa's PSR position in January, they didn't have a lot of money to spend. You were still thinking, all right, well, they've clearly forked out a little bit for this lad. They clearly trust him. As I say, they've doubled the money already, probably adding £5 million onto it after he plays against Chelsea again. It's really exciting talent.
John Joe says, just over 75 games now into the Unai Emery tenure. His 75th game was the Arsenal match. What are your favourite top five games under Emery? Does it have to be the best? But the ones that meant the most. Now, when I put the running order together for this, I put a little note next to it saying, I think this needs to be its own podcast. I think what we need thinking time.
I
think you could spend an hour talking about like the best bits of that.
Yeah, because there's a hell of a lot to choose from as well. Yeah, there's so many. I know that when I say something, I'll think, but that one was... I always look to the away games, to be honest. Like, we went on like a 16, 15 match home winning run, didn't we? Like, I can't remember all those games. I don't know, mate. Like, there's so many, and for so many different reasons. Like, beating Palace 3-1, we didn't play well, but that is like a memory, which is brilliant. Away games, like beating Luton 3-2. These probably aren't what you would be expecting me to say, but just how I felt afterwards, like winning against Luton in the last minute. Again, didn't play amazing in the second half, but I don't know. Boss Man City off the park, winning against Arsenal 2-0. There's so many for so many different reasons. You can pick and choose any.
I know, it's mad. I had a look through the fixture list of just this season, never mind last, just to see if I could pinpoint a couple. And I couldn't, but like I said, I think we will just do this as its own podcast. So But yeah. I was just scrolling back and looking at like chunks of the season and how good we've been over the course of time, which is why we're fourth, obviously. But I went back to obviously Arsenal and Man City just to see what the fixtures were like around it as well. And you've got a period from the 12th of November till the 17th of December, so just over a month. Beat Fulham, beat Spurs, drew away to Bournemouth, which was a decent result, beat Man City and Arsenal back-to-back, beat Brentford, then obviously we draw to Sheffield United at home, and before that we lost to Forest. But that period there, grouping of six really difficult games, but Brentford away, obviously they've not been great this season, Bournemouth I've just mentioned, Fulham at home, whatever, but then you've got Spurs, Man City and Arsenal. Traditionally, if you'd have come out of that six-game period with... I don't know, even 6 points, 9 points, maybe you'd have gone, that's probably about as, that's the limits of our capabilities. We got 16 out of 18.
That Brentford game as well, that was so sweet. I love going to the Brentford games. I don't know why. We got a last minute goal last season and coming back from behind. Yeah, there's so many moments, games. We battered Brighton 6-1, smashed West Ham 4-1. Yeah. Like last season, everything that happened as well. Brighton on the final day, there's so many to choose from. You got to devote time to it and go through it. It's not, I'll just be naming more results at this point.
Is that something you think we should wait till the end of the season?
Yeah,
we've got at least another six games that could make it into the list.
Yeah, I'd wait till the end of the season.
Okay, that's something we'll do in the summer then. Unai Emery's best games so far as Villa head coach, which will be 80 odd games by that point.
We should just rank them all.
What, 1 to 80?
Yeah.
Okay, let's try and do that then. Ranking Unai Emery's 80 Aston Villa matches. All right, okay, next question. Rach asks, do you have any concerns about the Unai Emery to Bayern Munich links? No.
No, I don't.
Not a concern at all. He was asked about this, wasn't he, in the week? Is that right?
Yeah, he was asked about it in his press conference, which maybe this is maybe in a... Like, twofold. As journalists, he came out in Bild, by the way, for people who didn't know earlier yesterday, I think, just saying that Bayern Munich like Emery. And, journalists have to ask the question because it's news. You know, you have to put it to the manager. What about it? But me as probably as more of a Villa fan, I felt like Villa have bought his club in Spain. His son's playing for the 21s. He's on a massive contract. He's got all the staff here. He has all the power. This isn't a question that he's going to entertain in a press conference. And again, I've just answered why it wouldn't happen anyway. So it felt like just a kind of, here's the news in Germany. What do you think? But just, I don't know. After Villa winning and stuff, it wasn't a surprise that he just said 7 words, I think it was. It was just like I'm focused here 100%, absolutely. Like, you know. And then there was going to be a follow-up, but then it got moved on, basically, in the press conference. So we don't want to talk about it after this. Or we don't want to talk about it anyway. I don't worry about that, no. I'll write a piece about it probably tomorrow, basically explaining everything that he has and everything that he wants, which he has. Yeah, that's why
you'll hear it many times, and it's obviously contextual with who is available and what managers leave their jobs and what jobs come up. Oh, Man United needs to sack Ten Hag and go for Unai Emery, give him the keys to Manchester and let him transform that club. It's frankly not as simple as that. Is there any club that you'd be worried about? Because people say, oh, if the Barcelona job comes up or the Real Madrid comes up, but you know, we've always said the Chiefs up in Spain know absolutely what Emery can offer anyway before coming to Villa, and they've not gone for him before. So for me, I remember when we did bold predictions earlier in the season? I can't remember when it was. It might have been an in-person thing, possibly. We did a bold prediction, and mine was that, I don't know what yours was, mine was that we'd finish above Arsenal, which is looking unlikely now, I will say.
I know mine didn't last long, but yeah.
Let's do that again, bold prediction again. I don't think... Oh, no, how do I even word this? As I just said, there's the context of certain jobs coming up available and maybe Villa go on a horrific run and we have to sack Emery, God forbid, right?
God damn.
Which sounds mental. My bold prediction is I think Emery will be one of the longest serving managers with Villa in the Premier League.
Have you got a good track record with these predictions? I hope you do.
Well, you know, I'm fourth at the start of the season, but the rest of it probably...
Oh, yeah, you do, yeah. No, we'll take that.
I think he will have like a 10-year career, is what I'm saying. Like, you've got like Ferguson, Wenger, probably Klopp, Guardiola, and I think Emery with Villa will be like one of the most longest serving managers with the club.
Well, it's set up for that. That's what I'd say.
That's what I mean. Like, if everything goes well, we're not going to get rid of him, and I don't see him going to Man United or Liverpool or whatever. Like, there will be a job somewhere at some point, and it's all context based. If Villa fall off a cliff and Barcelona comes up at the right time, maybe it does happen. But if everything goes the way we want it to, and we're always in the Champions League or the Europa League, we win the odd FA Cup here and there, we're not a million miles away from a title race, which, to be honest, we're not now, given the season that we've had, which is mental. Like, another 6 or 7 points and we'd be within touching distance now. Yeah. So why would you leave this setup? So yeah, I think it's a 9-10 year career with Villa is my bold prediction, which come back in 2034 to find out whether that comes true or not.
Yeah, I think you're right. I can see him saying for a long time, say it's set up for that, and I don't know what would change his mind. If anything would, I don't think it would. Like, I have no worries about the worst case scenario, put it that way. As I said before, the footballing side's fantastic. The other side of the kind of the business side, we're improving now. That is, you know, that's something that would changed a year ago, and is always going to take a bit more time. What I'm talking about is increasing revenue, because I've always said the football side's like up here, the business side is, you know, lower, because it's almost like we're starting to kind of rev the engine with it, if that makes sense. Where Chris Ek can't just all of a sudden attract investment and do all of this, whereas Emery can work his magic in a footballing sense and guide Villa at the table and improve players, whereas Heck and the other members of staff on the business side, they need to do it gradually, and it's important that happens and it continues to happen. But Villa being in the position they are helps that side. I know that's not talking about Emery, but what I'm saying is, you know, for us to continue to fuel Emery's kind of ambition, if that makes sense, to continue sustaining where we are and what we're doing, we do need to continue to raise money. And, you know, as I say, there's the signs that that's happening now. So that needs to continue as well.
UTV Hub says, do you think we look better without Douglas Luiz? I'm not saying he shouldn't play. However, I have been impressed with Tielemans and McGinn sitting deep as of recent. There was loads of questions again about Douglas Luiz. Does he come back in against Chelsea? That kind of thing, which feels like a mad thing to say because for large parts of the season, he's been an integral part of this year's success. However, we were very concerned about the Bournemouth and Arsenal games and missing him. They're going to be really difficult without him. And then we've got him to win both, so... Does Douglas Luiz come straight back in against Chelsea?
Yeah, maybe I'll be proven wrong if we lose to Chelsea and Luiz plays alongside McGinn or Tielemans. But Luiz is, what, nearly £100 million player, something like that? You know, I don't think it's as simple as how he comes out and we've won two games and he shouldn't play the next game. I don't see that myself.
What if he didn't play against Chelsea and we won again? Is there then a case that you're like, well, we can't?
No, I'd say the same thing as well. If we beat Chelsea without Luiz, we'd probably beat him with him. Like, he's a fantastic footballer and I understand the balance stuff, but he's played like every game under Emery. I'm pretty sure Emery would know if there's an issue, there's a clear problem when he is playing alongside a player. Yeah, you could put it the other way and say, well, if it's an issue for him playing as a sitter with Tielemans and McGinn, or put it this way, if McGinn and Tielemans are so good as a double pivot, then play Luiz higher. Like, the guy has to play. Yeah. I don't know whereabouts you put him. But yeah, I'd expect Luiz just to play with Tielemans in the next game and then McGinn maybe like more advanced.
Bailey needs a rest, doesn't he, if he's carrying something?
Players have got 2 days rest. I don't think it's a huge problem, to be honest with you. I think he had a bit of pain for the Thursday, but you wouldn't know it, and you wouldn't know it if he did on Sunday. I'd say more Diaby probably needs to come out. Maybe that's hard. I don't know. But when I say that, it's because I think we need something off the bench. When you look at the bench yesterday, it was really weak in terms of options to come on, and we didn't need it in the end to win the game. We were already winning. But yeah, I would probably play McGinn as a kind of a supporting striker almost, as I was playing that advanced role. And then Bailey right, Rodgers left. That's some options there, some physicality as well, you know, proper powerhouse forwards they are. So that would be my team.
Mint Villa says, is this the best season we've had since the beginning of the Premier League? Now, we finished runners-up in the first year of the Premier League, so we're not going to finish second this year. So from a league standing position, no. We finished fourth in 95-96 and won a trophy, which it was the League Cup, obviously. I think we'll do that again. I think we'll win the Conference League and finish fourth this year. You've got the O'Neill era, obviously finishing sixth a few years in a row. That's our era, isn't it? That's our best that we compare it to, fans of our age. But this, what we're seeing now, the football we're seeing is infinitely better than anything I've seen in my lifetime. Under O'Neill, we never controlled a game in the way that we do under Emery. This group of players, I think, are better players than what we had back then. So for us, yes, this is the best Premier League season ever. I would be interested what fans who were around to see Villa properly in the 90s would think compared to those early years. It was that better. Let us know. But for us, this is the best, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I don't know how it can... I hate saying this, but don't get me wrong, it can get better than this, but I can't imagine it. Like, and that's not to say it won't, but I don't know how it... We've had so many injuries. We've had so many issues, problems. And we've just overcome everything. And we're playing some brilliant football. We're battering teams at some points. We've beaten Man City, we've beaten Arsenal, we're in a European semi-final. I hope we'll be in the Champions League next season. So next season, maybe it gets better. Maybe we go in the Champions League and go into the knockouts and we're still sustaining what we're doing this season in the league. That's how it gets better for me. But that is like a huge task, but one that you think, well, bring it on. So
yeah.
Is what I would say, Dan. So far, this is my favourite season, if that was the question, or the most enjoyable. Absolutely. And obviously, having a perspective of it is how I do now. Like, the privilege I have to go to all the games probably makes it sweeter as well. So, yeah, for sure, this has been a dream season. Kind of gone above and beyond my expectation. And even in like the O'Neill era, I think, I don't know for sure, but as far as I can remember, it was always trying to knock on the door of Champions League. Was it 3 6th place finishes in a row? So, you know, we didn't we certainly didn't achieve more than what we set out to. but we are now. So it's yeah, absolute kind of dream scenario.
Yeah, agreed. Next question from Sam. Would you swap Unai Emery for Pep Guardiola?
I wouldn't want to know. No, I wouldn't. If you asked me now, would you tell Unai Emery to leave Villa and bring a new manager? And I don't care if it's Pep Guardiola. No, I don't want it.
Nah, it's weird though, isn't it? Imagine saying that 5 years ago.
But like, I think it's what it brings though as well. Like, just, I know that fans or whatever, it would just be like, oh yeah, but you know, he's the best manager to live or whatever. I don't know. It's just football's a bit more than sometimes just winning things. And I love Unai Emery.
Yeah.
Him being the manager of Aston Villa is everything I want in a manager. No excuses. Conducts himself to the highest level. And I'm not saying Pep Guardiola doesn't, or that he has rants like other managers do. I don't think Guardiola is that bad in that sense, or even if he is, I don't know. But don't care. I want Unai Emery. Like, the job he's done, he's all those memes on Twitter, it's been like, oh, you've changed my life. And it's like, I'm just a football manager. But that's the feeling, man. Like, yeah, that's how, mean, yeah. That is the feeling.
Like, supporting Villa is like the best thing ever, right? It's our club, and doing the podcast is amazing. But Unai Emery has heightened all of those feelings, because we're proper now.
Best time I've watched my football club that I love, and it's because it's not solely down to Unai Emery. Like, the owners saved us from oblivion, all that stuff. But Unai Emery has changed a lot, everything. Yeah, like, the whole thing. Why the hell would I be so disrespectful to then take him out for a manager? I don't care who he is. I don't care what they are, even if it guarantees something, whatever. I want Unai Emery to achieve it with Villa. And that's the kind of my overriding feeling. Like, I understand the question of, would you change him for arguably the best thing ever? You know, if you were being kind of cynical with it, I think some people would be like, yeah, because, you know, we'd be closer to a league title or whatever. I don't know. Unai Emery's my man.
It feels a little bit like the conversations we have about, like, swapping Watkins for other strikers. Like, we know that Watkins works in this system. Maybe Pep Guardiola can't do it with this level.
That's another. I was just looking at the kind of, I wouldn't even do it. But yeah, you could look at it again and think, well, would Guardiola work with these players? I don't know. The argument probably is that he would, because he's a very good manager. But yeah, would it fit in different places, is what you're trying to say. And
Would Pep Guardiola have taken over Aston Villa after Steven Gerrard in that position and done what Emery's did?
That's the main point. And put it this way, he wouldn't have achieved anything better.
Jack says, how many more points do you think we need to finish fourth? And he's handily sent me the fixtures for us and Spurs. So Villa, 66 points. Spurs, 60. Spurs have two games in hand, as we know. They have six remaining. We have four. We play Chelsea, Brighton, Liverpool and Palace. So a maximum of 78 points available. Spurs have Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, Burnley, Man City, Sheffield United. A maximum also of 78 points available. So Villa need, I think, two more wins to get fourth.
Two wins sticks us on 72. Tottenham would then have to win four of their last six games to match that.
Yeah, then we'd hope that our goal difference is better as well.
Yeah, our goal difference is five or six better now, so we're in a good position with that. Goal scored is better as well. If we're talking about us winning two more games, that will increase our goal difference, because I don't think we're going to... If we lose to Liverpool, if we draw to Brighton, for example, our goal difference won't go down. If we lose to Liverpool, I don't think it'll be more than one goal. So our goal difference, I think, will be better, let's put it by three or maybe four, just as a guess. Tottenham have then got a bit of work to do then to get a better goal difference. So I would suggest Tottenham, if we win two games, then yeah, Champions League should be ours, because Tottenham would have to win, say, four of their last six. They've got two wins for me already in Burnley and Sheffield United. They're then going to have to probably win against Chelsea.
And then
they've got Liverpool, Arsenal and City. So they're going to have to win those games. And that would only get as many points as what we would if we would win two. So it's absolutely in our hands. Bournemouth was so important, because now we can go into Chelsea and think, right, if we can get this win, we are one away from finishing the top four. And, you know, Brighton away, yeah, tricky game. But if we were to have beaten Chelsea, God, like, that then becomes
the first leg of the Europe between those games as well, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. But don't ignore it, but I almost just think, well, okay, you know, that's all right. Because, as we heard earlier from Jay, like, when we play Europe, we tend to win or do well after that anyway. Yeah. So, yeah, two wins for me. Then Tottenham have got a lot of work to do.
Let's move on now, John, to here's something I saw this week and wanted to talk about. My favourite section. Did you see, and I know you've seen it because about 30 million people have, Nottingham Forest's Twitter account at full time yesterday. Oh my word. What did you, I don't need to explain it, because if you've not seen it, where have you been? What do you make of that?
What I would say is, and I think it gets lost sometimes, it's come, and I think probably from one person, and I know, and I'm probably giving it away here, but I know he owns the club. This shouldn't reflect on Nottingham Forest. They're a proud English institution, and I don't want to put them in the category of, oh, they're a disgrace, they're this and that. Because it's, as I say, I'm pretty sure it's one person that's basically ordered that tweet and said to the communications team, send this, because we need to make a message. He's also the person who's appointed Mark Clattenburg, and he's paying him to talk positively about Nottingham Forest or negatively about officials when it's to do with Nottingham Forest. Mm. So I'm almost disassociating it all from Nottingham Forest, and it's the owner who also owns Olympiacos, so we'll see what happens there.
Yeah.
But that's where I'm at with it. Like, I think people can get lost in the kind of, oh, I can't believe the social media team posted that. Yeah, because the guy who pays their wages has told him to. I understand the outrage, but also, if you think about it, it's just the guy who went on the pitch the other week to shout over a referee, then you can probably understand it. I think that's the, you know, so I think it's funny, and it's not a good look for Nottingham Forest, but I think
it won't help their cause at all, will it? Because I think there'll be a lot of fans who would have sympathy with some of the bad decisions that Forest have had this year. Like, we, Forest is one of our clubs that we work towards, for me at least anyway. There's a Forest podcast that I have to produce, so I'm well invested in some of these things. So I would really feel sorry for Forest, especially if they go down, that they've been on the bad end of some really bad decisions. Like, that's actually on yesterday. Stonewall penalties. You don't get them, and that's the game. Sometimes you just have to deal with it. And for your club to be associated with effectively your owner sticking his phone out and going, I'll post this for us, and being essentially a laughing stock and a disgrace to the game and the integrity of it and whatever else, is a really bad look. And you're not going to get much sympathy from other fans and official governing bodies or whatever else when you're behaving like that. So it's done them absolutely no favours whatsoever. Forest fans, on the other hand, are like, finally somebody's standing up for us. And yeah, it's time. We've been through all the official channels and it's done nothing, and we have to do something different and something outlandish. Look, everyone's talking about us at least. It's like, yeah, but the vast majority aren't talking about you in a good way. It's that you're a bit of a joke.
Yeah, I kind of reiterate what Gary Neville says about the whole, we will consider our options. You've got no options. Your option is to get on with it and beat Everton, because they're not a very good team. And I understand they had some bad decisions go against them, but you also can see two goals. Like, you have to just look at yourself in these situations. You're down there for a reason. It's because you haven't played very well this season. You can still stay up comfortably, so do it. That's how I'd look at it if it was Villa as well. Yeah, I'd be saving at the decisions, but you got a good enough team there to stay in the division. So crack on.
Yeah, let's crack on then with another couple of questions to end. This is our nonsense section of the show. So much so that Matty messaged and said, nonsense alert. Here's my question. you're going to love this. I can tell you that. In a fight to the death with 100 ducks versus an elephant, which species would be victorious?
I've lost you 100 ducks. Can you repeat that?
Oh, sorry. So 100 ducks are fighting in a death with one elephant, right? Who would win? And Nick, just another viewer, commented saying, I don't see how the duck's beak could penetrate the thick hind of an elephant. Or are we suggesting that the ducks may be armed? who would win?
Sorry, Nick, like, your point is true, but when you say armed, with what?
Knives or something?
And do what? I think I'm picking a knife up. All the elephant has to do is go on a walk. If they're just going to follow him,
trample.
Stomp, stomp, stomp.
Yeah. All right, here's a follow-up question then. This is the classic.
What do you mean if they're armed?
This is the classic question. We've had this before, but with different animals. Would you rather fight 100 duck-sized elephants or one elephant-sized duck?
The first one, because you're basically just fighting ducks.
100 elephants.
Yeah, because it's just a duck, isn't it? If it's just that small.
Yeah, but like, well, not that big.
Yeah, just kick it.
100 of them, though. I think the quantity is the problem. That's a lot. Imagine, right, going out on your front drive, whatever, wherever you live. Yeah. I don't know if you're on a roadside or on the drive, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And 100 things. Not dogs, obviously, because they're much bigger, but imagine like 100 of something running at you, coming for you. Like, that's scary.
I'm pretty sure if I went out my front door and saw an elephant-sized duck, I'd shoot myself off. that would throw me. You know?
I suppose if you've got a fight,
100%, 100%. How do I put it? How is a small elephant going to attack you? Like, as in a duck-sized elephant, not a baby elephant. They're big, but what they're going
to
do.
Anyway, we're moving on to the final question of the show from James. This is football related and Villa related as well, but it is stupid. Nice. He says, if you had to pick one former manager to take charge of the final four Premier League games, who would it be? But before you say somebody good, he's given us four options to pick from. And they're all crap. Remy Gard, Di Matteo, Paul Lambert, or Alex McLeish? I think there's an obvious choice here.
Is there?
Yeah. The best of a bad bunch.
I would probably say Remy Gard.
No. Why?
Who would you say?
I don't know, Lambert.
Paul Lambert right now to manage Villa.
What do you mean right now?
Are we doing the question off who they are right now or when they were? Like what?
I went off when they were Villa manager.
Right, but that doesn't really make sense though, because
no,
I think it has to be based off now. Remy Gard was bound to fail, and I feel like he'd probably don't know. I feel like he'd at least have a kind of a continental few tactics, whereas Lambert would probably just go in and shout at him a little bit.
Lambert was trying to get us to play out from the back and stuff, so we are more suited to that these days.
Those three, I don't think we would. I think it would be horrible. But Gard, at least, is a bit unknown because I'm not sure what he was.
Oh, I think that's the least popular answer out of all of them, to be honest.
These players are so ingrained to what Emery wants them to do, they could probably just do it. But it would be nice to not have Lambert, McLeish heckling them from the sides. So I think Gard would just sit there and it would be like, right, you're the manager, but don't do anything.
Maybe.
Play the corner.
Yeah, all right, I've come round to your logic in the end. I still think he's an awful, awful football manager, but to be fair, so are the others.
Exactly.
Let's call it a day there. John, thank you so much for your time. This has been a bumper edition of the Clout and Brew podcast. Obviously, a free week this week in terms of the football. The next game is Chelsea, but also with plenty of content on Clout and Brew this week. Matt's Villa voice notes. You and me are going to jump on again at some point to talk about Ollie Watkins, and we'll do a preview for Chelsea as well at the back end of the week. So loads coming on Clout and Brew still. Stay subscribed, stay following us, and keep it up to date with our latest episodes. John, thanks for your time. Thanks everyone for watching or listening, and we'll see you again in a couple of days. Bye bye.